Okay, hi. I'm Beth Moeller. I'm 58 years old. I am coming from Milford, Connecticut, and interviewing Bill Monty for a series on Griswold Home Care associated with Wisdom in Honor of Senior Citizens Day to help elevate life for the rest of our community during these pandemic times. And I'm interviewing Bill Monty.
Good
Bill, can you?
morning. Pleasure to be here, Beth. Nice to be able to talk with you. I'm 80 years old. I currently reside in North Salem, New York. This is the longest place I've ever lived. We've been here for 30 years. That's the longest place my wife and I have ever, one place we've ever lived.
Beautiful. You must love it there. So when we
We
spoke
do.
br-
We do.
when we spoke
I'm sorry.
briefly, you mentioned that you were involved in nuclear energy and had a lovely wife and family. And I wonder if we could begin unpacking your life by kind of starting at the beginning with your childhood. So would that work for you?
Yes,
Yes.
it would.
Okay. So can you tell me about your family?
Well, I'll start off with I was born in Manhattan in a little hospital called St. Clair's. And after 6 months, my parents, who lived in the village, as it was called then, down in Lower Manhattan, decided they were going to move to the Bronx. And so I was raised in the Bronx. I was born in Manhattan, raised in the Bronx. I went from kindergarten through college, all in the Bronx, and all in the public school system.
My mother, what part of the Bronx did you live? McKinley, did you say?
We lived in the North Central Bronx. It was on White Plains Road, that area there. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all.
Wow. Can you tell me some of the things about your childhood? I know the Bronx was a fun place to grow up. Can you tell me about some of the things you love to do, some of the things that you found most difficult and had to overcome?
Well, it was interesting. We lived in a 5-floor walk-up, and I was a little bit tubby when I was a child, so had to go up and down stairs. And the grade school that I went to was right down the street from where we lived, and I'd go down in the morning to go to school, come back for lunch, come climb the stairs, go back down again, and go to school, come back up
Work
at 3 o'clock.
off your lunch.
It sort of kept me trim. And when I was about 8 or 9 years old, my mother developed a heart condition where she wasn't allowed to go out of the house except to go to church on Sunday, and I would have to do the shopping. So I'd go down, come home from school, get the list, and go down the stairs. And she would watch me from the window to make sure that I didn't cross the big avenue, which was White Plains Road, where the trolley cars were and all of that. I had to walk up the stairs and cross over on the subway, if you will, line to get down the other side of the street. But coming home, I was a
How old
little
were you?
crafty. I was 8 years old at the time, and I would do the shopping. I guess I was big enough to do it.
Where was your father?
My father was working, so he had, he had a full-time job, and you had to have groceries in the house so you could have supper ready and things of that nature. So I would do that. It didn't last for, it lasted for, well, I think about a year or so, and it was okay. It kept me trim, if you will. But coming home, instead of coming back up the subway, I'd get down the block and I'd cross the street and then make believe I got back down the subway on the other side so she would see me that I was obeying her
You're
rules.
breaking up a little.
Hey, are you still there?
Wow, you were very brave.
Well, you had to do it. It was fun. And the neighborhood I grew up in was a very interesting neighborhood. It was a neighborhood that was racially mixed, ethnically mixed. So we never thought about things about people. We didn't put people into compartments. You go out to play, you choose up sides to play softball, or you choose up sides to play basketball. And it was always you were doing things with people and they were doing things with you, which was the important thing. And from the grade school,
Yes.
we We left grade school at 6 and went to junior high school, which was about 6 or 7 blocks further south from where I lived, and went there through 9th grade. It was 6, 7, 8, 9. I mean 7, 8, 9, excuse me. And from there I went to high school, and I went to DeWitt Clinton High School, which was an all-male high school at the time. And from there I went to the Maritime College at Fort Schuyler, which at that time was all male as well. And an interesting thing about high school in the
Wow.
yearbook, life is a series of self-fulfilling prophecies, if you will. And in your yearbook, under your picture, you had to put what you wanted to be when you grew up. And I use that term, euphemistically grew up. And under my picture, I put down I wanted to be an engineer. And lo and behold, I became an engineer. One of my classmates, Ralph Lifshitz, put under his picture he wanted to be a millionaire. Well, lo and behold, Ralph is a millionaire. His name is Ralph Lauren today. So you foretell your future at times, which was a very interesting thing.
That's wow. I'm going to start changing what I want to be when I grow up. I just want to say that your picture is no longer coming through on the screen. It's fine for me. I just wanted to let you know that I don't see you. I can hear you though perfectly.
See, I have
So,
a.
what?
Ahead, I'm listening.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm listening.
It's okay. It's okay. So you always loved math and science. Is that what inspired your interest in engineering?
Yes, and primarily because it's very precise. Math and science is very precise. I never got along too well with poetry and interpreting poetry and things of that nature. I was interested in history, but not poetry. And engineering and math had a precision to it. And it was interesting, the high school that I went to, we had teachers who had participated in the Manhattan Project. My physics teacher was a man who had worked at Columbia University on the Manhattan Project. So he brought a perspective to physics that, you wouldn't otherwise have. His wife also taught in the school, and she was a physics teacher as well. So the high school that I went to was a very interesting high school. It was a high school that you had to elect to go to. There were no tests for it, and it was further from my house than the local high school was. But it offered something that I was interested in.
Absolutely. So, and it was an all-male high school as well, you said. Were you able to make friends when it was at such a distance from your local community?
Yes, absolutely. Well, some of my friends from my neighborhood went there also. They were either younger than I was or
Okay.
older than I was. So there was that kind of bonding there.
That's great. Was there a particular kid or friend that had a lot of influence on your life?
Not really. The person with the most influence on my life was my father. He and I would have long
Tell me
conversations.
that.
We would have conversations, and on Sunday afternoons, he worked a second job as well to make ends meet. And on Sunday afternoons after church, we would have dinner, and then he and I would go for a walk and talk about what he wanted to be. He was a high school graduate, but had to go to work after high school because his father had died. I mean, his mother had died, and he had to help out in the family. But interestingly enough, he was the youngest. He had 5 sisters, and he was the youngest, being the only boy. And so we had long conversations about what he thought he wanted to be if he had the opportunity, and what I wanted to be. And they coincided in lots of things. So we had a very good relationship that way, my father and I. Great influence on me.
Is there a particular expression you associate with him or a saying that he really instilled in you?
None in particular, other than, just keep at it. He would one of the things he would do when he would go to work early in the morning, and he would cut out of the newspaper the jumble. And if you remember that in the newspaper, And his goal for me was to have that done by the time he got to work. And I was usually pretty good at that. And that's sort of a game
You taught you time management from the get
from the
go.
get-go, right? And it's interesting, my wife and I, when we try to go to sleep at night, we'll give each other scrambled words and try to work them out. So it's something that's carried over.
That's so fun. I love that tradition. So how many kids were in your family?
I just had I had a younger brother. He was 5 years younger than I am, and he's still around. He lives in Wisconsin. He lives in Milwaukee. He's a college professor. He teaches ancient Greek and Latin, farthest away from.
Wow, so one had one side of the brain,
The
the
other had
other
the
had
other
the
side,
other.
exactly. And he was
So
more.
you've been doing this.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No. I was going to say he was more the
You've been
scholar.
doing this remote. I'm sorry. You've been doing this remote communication for some time. Is there a best practice to stay in touch with your close, people in a remote construct?
Well, most of the way we keep in touch with friends and all is by telephone. I'd rather talk to someone than, it's impersonal. Sending emails back and forth is there are some cute things that come through, but it's more talking to people. It's hard when you can't do face-to-face talking, and when you're talking to a screen, you don't have that same kind of feeling or empathy for one person for another.
Right. So, you mentioned that you're a physicist. Can you
No, I'm
or
not a
involved
physicist.
in nuclear power?
I graduated.
Engineer involved in nuclear.
I graduated from the Maritime College with a bachelor of marine engineering. But my whole thrust in life was to get involved with nuclear power for propulsion and then ultimately for creation of electricity. And what really got me onto it, when I was a child, when I was a kid, there was a weatherman on a New York City station called Uncle Weatherby. His name was Tex Antoine. And Con Edison was his sponsor. And he was talking about the nuclear power plant that Con Edison was building at Indian Point. And it fascinated me. So that was my first taste of it. And then when I became an engineer, that was my thrust. My first job, aside from sailing the Merchant Marine, was to work for a company called Foster Wheeler that was manufacturing large components for nuclear-powered submarines, things like reactor vessels and steam generators, things of that nature. And so I got involved in the design and manufacture of those. And then I was more curious then, how do you put these things together? You connect this reactor vessel and the steam generator with the pumps to make it work. And I left Foster Wheeler and I went to work for Electric Boat. It's a submarine builder in Groton, Connecticut. And I worked there for 3 years. And I became a test engineer there. But then I still wasn't satisfied because I wanted to get my hands on operations. Having grown up in a world of operating ships and things like that. So I started looking around for nuclear power plants. Well, we were living in New London, Connecticut, but we were, really New Yorkers in that sense. We wanted to be back close to our parents, my wife's parents, and my parents. So I applied to Con Edison for a job. And I told him, I was kind of brazen or bold, if you want to call it that. I said, the only place I want to work is at Indian Point. So if you don't want to offer me a job there, that's okay. I'll go somewhere else. But I came for an interview there, both in Manhattan, and they sent me off to Indian Point to talk to the man who was the general superintendent of the site. We had a nice conversation, and when we finished the conversation, he said to me, where do you want to be in 15 years? So I said, I'd like to have your job in 15 years. Kind of brazen,
Tell him.
but believe it or not, a little more than 15 years later, I did have his job. I was able to work myself up into that position. And the interesting thing,
It seems like
no, I'm sorry.
it seems like visioning your future really helped you get there.
I guess so in a way, yeah. And so that was interesting. And we moved back down to New York and back in April of 1967. That was a little more than 1 month after our first child was born. And the day I walked in the door, he said to me, "Oh, by the way, in September, you, along with the other three engineers that are out there, are going to be have to take your senior reactor operator license test." I was a little taken aback by that because you had to learn the plant inside and out, and you had to be able to operate the plant. And the other three engineers had been there for at least a year and a half, and some 3 years before I got there. So I said, "Well, wow, this is a task and a half. Am I up to the challenge?" And believe it or not, I achieved it. I became a senior reactor operator on unit number one within that 3 month, or that 4 month period of time. It took a
What
lot
do
of
you
work.
think helped you accomplish that? That sounds so challenging.
Well, my bride, my wife, she's always been like the mainstay. And she stood behind me. She said, "If you have to do it, you do it." And there was a lot of work into it. But in the end, it was worthwhile. And she's been my rock in so many ways. So,
That's beautiful.
yeah.
How'd you meet your wife?
Believe it or not, I met her in a skating rink in Mount Vernon, New York. We used to go roller skating from the Bronx up to Mount Vernon. And I met her there. We started talking, and it just went on from there.
Did you spot her a distance and say that's the one, or did you just meet her happening,
It was
by your side?
when you meet someone and you talk with them and they become part of you in the conversation, you become part of them in the conversation. It continued.
So, how
And
long
in
have you been
fact,
married?
we've been married 58 years. We got married in 1962, and it was interesting. She was going to college at the time, and I was going to be graduating that June, and we wanted to get married. So she decided she was going to finish college in 3 years. And by golly, she did it. She went to Hunter College in New York City, and she did it in 3 years.
Wow, so did my mom.
Did she? Yeah.
You sound like a very determined couple.
Well, we try to be.
So it sounds like you said you kind of knew you were right because you finished each other's conversations or you were involved in each other's conversations. If you were to give some advice to people to know how to pick someone you'd be happy with 58 years later, what would you say?
Well, can you converse? Are you happy being in their company? Can you go through the hard times together? Can you go through the happy times together? Are you willing to sacrifice for each other? Are you willing to sacrifice for your children? All those kinds of things. You have to. I had a very good piece of advice from the chairman of the engineering department at the Maritime College. And our
Advice on love.
our last course was a seminar course, and where we had to design a power plant and do the whole heat balance and all of that. And he then at the last day of the course, there was no final exam in that course. It was what you presented was your final exam, and you get your grade on that. And he said to the class, and there were, I don't know, about 15 of us in the class. The class started out big and shrunk down because of the engineering demands. A lot of people left. And he said, and the class was, we're a mixed religion in the class, some Jewish guys in the class, there were Christians. And he said, "We're going to have a Cana conference today." Now, most people didn't know what a Cana conference was, right? If you're Catholic, you go to the priest and you're taught what marriage is and the rest of that. And he says, "I'm going to say it once. You gotta listen carefully." He says, "Marriage, they still break up when I think about this.
Oh.
Marriage is 100% proposition. Go and have a good life."
It's a
And
hundred
58,
percent. I just didn't hear you.
it's 100%. You have to give 100%. It's not 50-50, 60-40. Either you give 100% or it doesn't work. That's the message that I took from it.
That is beautiful. That is really beautiful. Not
So,
expected to learn in an engineering class, is
yeah, exactly.
it?
Professor
Well,
Fruity
it
was his
served you
name.
well. You
Yeah,
earned your
his name.
degree.
Yeah, his name was John Fruity. I'll never forget it.
It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. So I know you've had your challenges.
Yes.
You and your wife have really been some team. So can you tell us a little bit about your family?
Well, we had two boys. Bill, our oldest, he was born in March 10th, 1967, and our youngest son, Jonathan, came along 7 years later. And we never thought we were going to have a second child. In fact, we were going through all the preparations to adopt. We tried, and it was very difficult at that time to try to adopt. We finally wound up going to the Burpee Foundation in Pennsylvania. And we went there, and the people there were saying, a third of you will adopt, a third of you will have your own children, and a third of you will give up because the process is too difficult. So we entered upon the process, and lo and behold, Fran became pregnant with our second child.
So, how many years later was that?
7 years later.
Between the kids?
Yes.
Okay.
And our oldest boy, Bill, married in 1993. And interesting, when he, after he graduated from college, he was working, and he kept saying, he said to us one day, I met someone. Okay, we never pushed him in any way, shape, or form. Would you like to meet him? Yes. Would you like to know her name? Yes. Her name is Fran, just like my wife. So, would you, and he said, would you like to know what she does? Yes. See, we're not prying. We don't pry into their lives in that sense. She's a teacher. My wife Fran's a teacher as well. So, it was funny. He brought her over for dinner one Sunday, and we're sitting out on the porch. And my wife comes out and says, "Okay, Fran and Bill, Fran and Bill." And there's a way we're going to sit,
So how did you distinguish between the two of you guys? Was
Well, my wife's name is Frances, and her name is Francine. But it just, you know who you're talking to and talking with. So it was just fun.
Oh, that's
And
funny. That's
she is just a delightful person, having gone through what she's gone through. Excuse me a second. Having gone through what she's gone through is just, amazing. And they were married in 93, and 2 years later he was diagnosed with ALS. Always a fatal disease. And at one point he said to her, if you want to divorce me, you can divorce me.
Oh.
Excuse me.
They
Because he
had
knew the outcome.
the belief in the 100%, 100%,
Yeah, right. And she said to him, what did we say to each other on the altar?
right? And the
And that
rest is
ended the
history.
conversation. That ended the conversation. They subsequently had two children, son who just graduated from college. His name is the same as mine, the same as his father's. And he just graduated from college, and you know what it is today. These kids have these virtual graduations and the rest of that. And he left his son, who was almost two, and a daughter who was 6 months old at the time. She's going into her junior year at Bucknell, and the kids are interesting. His children are very interesting. He has his son looks like him and has an easygoing personality. His daughter looks like him and is tough. In fact, their mother, Francine, says she's a Monty through and through. Meaning she has all the traits of her father.
So what does
She's
that
tough.
mean?
Well, it
What would
means
be
that
those?
she has all of the traits of the Monty family, which are tough. But she's also got a soft side. She's got a wonderful relationship with her grandmother, with my wife. After he died, it's 20 years ago, on our wedding anniversary this year. It'll be 20 years. And we helped in taking care of the kids because Francine continued to work. And while he was still alive, I was going there in the morning so she could leave and go to work. And she would take the children to her mother's, which was down in Armonk, not too far from here. And she worked in White Plains. And I would be there with Bill during the day. And my wife would come around supper time, would bring supper over for them. And then I would come home and do whatever preparation for our dinner was necessary, if anything. And that went on for the 3 years. And when I retired in 1997 to help take care of him. So I stopped working then. And he died, like I said, 20 years ago on our wedding anniversary. And we helped raise the kids. The kids spent lots and lots of time with us. In fact, Kayanne, who's his daughter, we think her name is apropos because people call her Cayenne. Her name is spelled Kayanne, all one word. And she spends a lot of time with my wife, so she knows how to sew, she knows how to cook, and all this kind of stuff. And they have a good bonding relationship, the two of them. And so, as tough
What
as
does that
she
mean?
is, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. As tough as she is.
So we believe that between the two of them, Francine and Billy, they decided that that was going to be her name, Cayenne. And their son is who's William Ridley Monty, but he didn't want to call William because he was William, I'm William, so we call him Ridley. Now, where he got the name Ridley from, Lord only knows. The only thing we could figure is it has to do with Ridley Scott, the film producer.
Okay.
So that's where we
Was
think
he
that
into?
came from.
So, and what about Cayenne? That's also an unusual name.
Yeah,
Where did that come
it don't
from?
you? I don't know. We don't know. It doesn't represent anything on either side of the family. So I think it just comes from they liked Mexican food. They liked, hot peppers and the rest of that. So I guess maybe that's the consequence of that.
So, you know, we're living in these pandemic times, but
Yes.
and there's a lot of disruption and inconvenience that everyone is experiencing, but nothing's like losing your loved ones.
Right.
I think that's what can you tell us from your experience? It seems that you and your children and your grandchildren have really mounted this struggle to live fulfilling lives. What do you think helped that happen?
Well, first off, having faith. Our son Bill never lost his faith. Our younger son has not lost his faith. He never blamed God. There's some people who say, "Well, why did God do this to me?" He didn't believe that. He believed that it happened, it happens. And we look at things in, yes, we're sorrowful. Yes, we're sad we lost him. But we have each other, and we try to prop up each other. You can sit and lament all the time, or you can take positive action. Both my wife and I were fortunate in that we left college with no debt. We didn't have a dime. That's why I had to go to sea to earn money so we could get married and buy furniture and all that other good stuff. But we had no debt. Both of our boys graduated college. We left them with no debt. And all of our grandchildren, we've been fortunate enough over time through, sacrifice, if you will, on our part, to they will have no debt when they graduate. Our grandson left college, no debt.
That's a
Our
huge
granddaughter was,
pressure off.
yeah, Yeah. So, and again, wanting to give, wanting to do for others. If you look, what can I do for someone else? I think you can take tragedy and turn it into a positive thing. That's what I believe, you know? And again, keep your faith. We've kept our faith. The boys kept their faith. In fact, Billy told his mother when he went off to college, I go to church not because of you, because you want me to go to church. I go to church because of me, because I believe. So that kind of, I'm
I
sorry, go
love
ahead.
that when you do for someone else, you take tragedy and you turn it to positivity. I love that line.
You try to, you know.
It sounds like that's a family mantra.
We try.
Of course. How have the boys responded? Your grandchildren. I'm sorry, your granddaughter and grandson, how have they weathered this?
Oh, the pandemic. Well, it's interesting. A
I
grandson,
meant that.
feels bad. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
A grandson, you could see he's a little hurt that, and he realized that, he didn't have a formal graduation. The school plans to have one this coming December, and he's finding it difficult to get interviews for jobs because there really aren't any jobs out there, people hiring. He graduated from the Henry Lee School of Criminal Justice at New Haven, which is a good school. He never wanted to be a policeman. He wants to get into investigatory work, that kind of work. So I don't think people are hiring in that area there. I've said to him, gave him some thoughts about what he could do, but I leave it with him and you try not to force him. Kayanne, who is the determined one, right? She was
The
upset upset that she couldn't be in class. She loves that school that she's at, and she's a determined kid. In fact, when did you ever hear of a child going to college and having all A's as a freshman? That's how determined this kid is. And you go to a school like
Wow.
Bucknell, it's not easy. And she did the same the first half of sophomore year, and my wife said to Kayanne, one day you're going to meet a B. And she wound up with a B plus in one of the courses the second half. So,
Is she remote right now to Bucknell, or is she up at
well, this
school?
last semester, they're going back. In fact, she's got to take two successive COVID tests. Both have to be negative, and then she can go back. So she goes back the end of this week. They're going to go back to campus. She's an officer in her sorority, so she has her own room in the sorority house, and all the other kids are going to have their own rooms for the most part. And she has all in-person classes so far, and she's hoping that nothing happens that they get, have to come back to remote because she's not that happy with the remote learning.
I can totally imagine.
Yeah.
A virtual graduation and remote learning, your grandchildren are the poster children for those that have been affected by the pandemic.
Yes.
Their kind of rites of passage are being completely rewritten.
Yes.
How do you see them handling that? And, what can we learn from the successes they've had?
Well, I think they're both handling it well. Even though Kayanne doesn't like it, she's accepted it. Her brother got through it. He finished his last half of his senior year, and he did read. He did well, and he didn't complain at all about it. I think the stumbling block for him is going to be becoming employed. Now he got himself a fill-in job, if you want to call it that, at a Honda dealer. It's not very challenging, They have him, he's a young man, and have him move cars around because he doesn't, he's not a salesman, obviously, and he's not a trained technician. So he's like the car jockey, moving from place cars from place to place. And he grins and he bears it. So I think he will do well, and I think she will do well coming out the other end of this. And his he did something unique in his sophomore year. He took a he went off to Europe, and he did 6 months in Europe. The University of New Haven has a campus in Italy, and he was the only one of his friends that did it. And he went over with a bunch of girls he didn't know, and he got over there and he made friends, and he traveled. Every weekend they were somewhere else in Europe, which was great for him, which was good, you know. So he's got
They
that
wouldn't be able to do that in these current times. So many kids were
correct,
called
yeah.
home from their schools.
Exactly.
So in these times, did they create a new tradition or a new way of connecting with their friends? What's keeping their sanity?
Well, believe it or not, interestingly enough, our grandson has he had they rented a house. He lived in a house up in West Haven. They moved out of the, you know, out of the dorms. So he kept his connection with his friends up there. He's kept his connection with some of his friends here in New York. So they see each other. And you know the way kids are, they'll see each other and they'll stay apart. You know, they're not rampant then, and they're not alcoholics. They don't all drink. That's a good thing, you know. And Kayanne went away on two separate occasions with her friends from Brewster. They went to an Airbnb in Pennsylvania, and then her friends from Bucknell. So she's kept in touch with them in that manner. And again, they're all very, you know, cognizant of what they have to do and how they have to behave and the rest of that. So in that sense, I think they've done, quote, well, unquote. You want to call it well?
By being smart and protecting themselves,
Yeah,
and trying
exactly.
to keep their lives going as they
Right. And
enjoy
yeah.
them.
Like our grandson yesterday, my wife was very concerned he didn't have a graduation party. So she said to him a couple of weeks ago, "Ridley, get your friends, come over. We have a pool in the back." She said, "Bring your friends over. We'll be in the house. You know, you don't have to see us, and we won't watch you. And we'll buy the pizzas for you." So I think what eight of them, and not including him, came over. We ordered the pizzas. We went off to church. We came back. They had the pizzas, and when
And
they left,
the
cops are not at the door. Right? We live in a very remote place here, anyway. But in
I'm
any
joking.
event, yeah, when they left just before sunset, because they were going back to his house. His mother has a. They built a fire pit in the back, and they were all going to go there. And he borrowed tents from my other son, and they were all going to sleep outside, which was good too. And when they left here, I looked at the pool area. It was exactly the way it was when they came. They cleaned up completely for themselves. They didn't make a mess. So, you know, he hangs out with a responsible group of people, which makes us very happy. It makes his parents very happy too.
It's beautiful. It
And
sounds like you guys have done a great job.
well,
We have
Tom.
a minute and a half left,
Okay.
and at this point, I'd like to ask you. So when you look through all of this, what really matters as people try to direct their attention to focus on their on what will make their life meaningful? What really matters?
What really matters is that you care for people, you care for your family, and that's what will see you through everything. Just to give you a small example, my wife's mother lived with us, oh, for 8 years. She fell and broke her femur, her arm, when she was 100, almost 101. And she came and lived with us and for 8 years, and she died at 109. But yeah, well, she comes from a family. Her mother almost achieved 101, and she was born a few years after Lincoln was assassinated. So think about longevity in the family. But I think the most important thing is that you're willing to give of yourself. You're willing to not take offense at every little thing. You know, let things slide. It's okay. You know, worry about the big things, take care of it, don't worry about the small things, and just love each other. Be there for the other person no matter what.
We've finished our time, and I have to
Okay.
tell you, let me just we'll be stopped. I'm gonna stop recording,
Okay.
and I'm gonna call you. Okay.
Okay. Very good. By the way, if you can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. You did an excellent job.
Oh, so did you. I just want to make sure I don't lose anything, so I'm just going to stop
Yeah,
recording.
I'll jab my
You
mouth.
really want to stop recording? No, I cancel. I just want to make sure I save this appropriately.